Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. It is June 29th. That is the June 29th freestyle by DJ Screw and the rest of the Screwed Up Click. It is a Houston holiday, baby. We are having holiday-type vibes. I hope that you're enjoying your Friday to this point. Again, appreciation to B. Scott. Appreciation to Sean Pendergast, both of which whom lent their voice to the program over the last hour. And we will keep it on rolling. Keep it on rolling on the day. All right. I am in day three, depending on how you view it, of my 2024 rewatch of the Texans season. I'm taking my notes to kind of revisit what happened in the Texans season. Of course, I reached my first speed bump of this. Did I say 29th? I meant 27th. Apologies. But yeah, I rewatch and I hit week three on the road, Minnesota Vikings. Lopez, what do you remember from this game?
All right, several things. This was a real eye-opener. Remember the first 2 weeks? We're like, yeah, okay, it's early on the first one. You know,
it was 2-0, right?
There were 2-0. There's going to be some growing pains as you get into your second season with C.J. Stroud. Then you get the Bears game, and you're like, well, that was kind of ugly. Should have probably won by more. But the defense is looking better. Week three is when I went, okay. Maybe there's more we need to be paying attention to.
Yeah.
Because number one, I remember going into that game thinking this is gonna be easy.
That's why I was looking like Sam Darnold.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one of my points. What you just said. Number one, this defense is gonna make life miserable for Sam Darnold, and I don't know how good he is to begin with. And then he ended up just lighting you up.
I didn't realize how good the defense for the Vikings was.
That's true. That's the second thing.
They were killing it.
And that's the one we probably should have known coming in. Brian Flores has bona fides in this league.
I didn't even think about
really,
that.
Really, really good defense coordinator. But at this point, we had not gotten to a place where we had a level of belief in Sam Darnold, Mr. Seeing Ghosts himself bounce around the league.
And it was still early, too, in the NFL season.
It was.
Yeah, but this was the first time I went, okay.
They might be for real.
Yeah, okay. No, well, not just are they for real, but like, is there something we need to start wondering about with this squad?
That's a fair point. You know? Well, going in, there was something that we knew was going to be a little bit of difficulty for the Texans, was that no Joe Mixon, no Damian Pierce in this one. And so Cam Akers with a little bit of a return home of sorts as the running back. And I forgot that this game was not just bad in the aggregate of a 34-7 loss, but it was instant pain.
Mm-hmm.
Holding on Cade Stover to start the game, trying to grab Blake Cashman, who was going to have a beeline towards CJ. Right, he timed the snap perfectly, which I don't know what that says about what the Texans were doing. But then also defensive tackle and nose tackle, in fact, Harrison Phillips,
yeah.
His name comes up a few times. He tips a little drop off that's supposed to go to Tank Dell, and then you have a Kamu Grugier-Hill interception.
Where'd he used to play?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of guys I've already mentioned a couple of them. Another one pops up because if you used to play for the Texans and you wore purple on that day, it was your time to shine.
Didn't Jack used to be saved his life? Was that him?
Oh, was that Kamu Grugier-Hill? Remember we put his hands on him as he's leaving the field? Yeah. Yeah.
He left off on a stretcher, man. I thought it was over. That brother played the next week.
And Easterby saved him.
I mean, I feel like in that instance, God saved him. Easterby was the vessel. But, you know, I get the point. Yeah,
Easterby took the credit for that one.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised? All right, some other things.
Outside of like a big outbreaker by Justin Jefferson, like early the D-line was pretty effective on early on. And then you end up with the situation where you start seeing the D-tackles get moved in this one, which was a little frustrating at times. But Sam Darnold was flushed. Like they were applying a level of pressure to him. But
he was nails, though.
He was. He was pretty damn good in this. All right. One of the first things I really wanted to make a big note of. There was a particular play that is funny enough. I teased this coming in from the last break, and B. Scott was like, ooh, Cade Stover. And I was like, oh, so you remember that vividly too, huh?
Yeah.
So there was a particular play where Cade Stover ends up one-on-one with Jonathan Greenard. Again, another one of those Texan to Vikings transitions there. And Greenard steamroll. I'm talking cartoonish steamroll where you end up with Bugs Bunny a centimeter high because he is just laid out flat like paper. That's what Cade Stover looked like. And I don't even know if that's someone's fault in particular as I was looking at it. It was a slide right on the offensive line, it felt like. Cade Stover is on the backside. And, you know, like, Stover just gets killed so quickly that CJ can't get the ball out quickly, which I imagine was what he was looking to do.
Yeah.
And, I mean, CJ is tackled before any of the three routes that are down there even have any level of break. So it was just a great job in my mind by Brian Flores, who brought guys up to the line, and they had like six available. One of them drops out on the side where you have a predominance of players. So you sliding your line to the right, the Texans, does not have as much impact. And then he's also not a known blitzer, Brian Flores. So he just took all of the things that you would think about his time and when you're game planning against him, and he flipped him on his head. He blitzed a lot in this game. And I imagine if you were game planning, a reasonable offensive coordinator goes, I should not expect a whole bunch of blitz, except he brought a whole bunch of it, and this team was not capable of handling it.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, the offensive coordinator, and this is, again, this is the first time where you go, whoa, why are you putting the tight end in one-on-one like that, you know, against a guy like Jonathan Greenard? And that was an ongoing theme as the season progressed. But in that game, Greenard was amazing. I mean, like, he just destroyed the Texans in that game. And I know you rewatched it, so I know this part. This was the other point I was going to make that was very memorable of that game. I know you're gonna have something on this part.
Maybe.
Laremy Tunsil season began.
Buddy. 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 There were so many, like, illegal formation by Laremy Tunsil. And so many of them also, it wasn't just that there was a foul on on the play. It's that it negated solid or two big plays time and time and time and time again. Like, this was peak frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there was a point in time where you had three straight false starts in this game.
Yes.
In the second quarter. It was disgusting. And one of the things that I had, it was an insane amount of not just, like, procedure penalties. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just Laremy as well, because I can mention him, but there was other
folks. Procedure was just pre-snap anything.
All the way across.
Yeah.
And my thought was, the boys are shook. But then also, does any of that line up with like a lack of belief in the game plan, right? Because one of the things that we got to at some point in the season, and that's why we saw like a switch up in the ways that the offensive line was handled. It's one of the reasons why Cole Popovich obviously retains or now has the start of the big time offensive line job, is that at some point late in the season, they made that switch because those guys did not believe in what the offensive line game plan was for Bobby Slowik. Was week three too early for that to creep in? Because it felt like there was a lot of times where these guys weren't locked in, and I wonder how much of that was just they didn't believe in what they were doing.
I actually just here as you bring up the question, I actually don't think it was too early, because you're also seeing tight ends get steamrolled. You're seeing C.J. Stroud not able to get the ball off, receivers not able to even get into the break of their route, and I don't think it was too early now that we look back at it. But that was the week, and boy, the next week was fun on the radio when we're like, all right, what's going on with Laremy? Because Laremy was the focal point of it all, but it was the entire line which would indicate maybe there's a lack, even if it's not lack of confidence, maybe just uncertainty, you know, a certain amount of uncertainty with what's being called and what they're asked to do.
All right, so you mentioned this game was very much are they getting big boyed coordinator wise?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing that you look Brian Flores to Bobby Slowik. On the other side, Kevin O'Connor.
O'Connell.
Kevin O'Connor is the basketball analyst. But Kevin O'Connell, thank you, I appreciate that. The head coach and play caller for the Vikings, it did feel like he had a one up on D'Amico as defensive play caller.
Yeah, it did.
And this is another thing. I don't know that there was a particular play, and I should have pulled this one, but there was a particular play where the Texans weren't rallying to the football. And I was like, I don't think I've ever seen, or I might not see that through watching the entirety of the season, a play where the Texans defense does not rally to the football. They might get beat. Guys might, you know, they might give up a big play, but at least they typically all as a team rally to the football. And I was like, oh, they look kind of dejected, like they did, like maybe they were smelling their own stuff or what have you, but they did not expect to be hit in the mouth in the way
that
the Vikings.
I think that second part is more of what it is. They didn't expect what we didn't expect. They didn't expect, I mean, Aaron Jones had a good game, as I remember it was well. Rushing,
he sure
the
did, 100 and some yards.
Yeah, and then Aaron Donald. And then Aaron Donald doing his thing. I think they were sort of
who?
Just taking a. I mean, Sam Darnold.
Yes. Okay. I was just. I legitimately was like, wait, I don't know where you're going.
It probably felt like Aaron Donald was on that defense, to be honest.
And then Sam Darnold was having a good game. I think they were just kind of like the offensive line. They were just like taken aback. You know, take a stun, so to speak.
Now, to that point, you mentioned the running game, and I mean, They ran the ball pretty well. This was a 118-yard performance on the ground. Not crazy, but also like pretty efficient in the way that they did. And one of the things about this is we haven't talked a lot about this offseason. How confident are we in this team's ability to stop the run? This game, like, they got mauled a lot. And there was only really one explosive, which was later in the game when the game was starting to get out of hand. But still, just – The Texans stacked the box in this game far more than any other game. Like 40%, 40-something percent of the time, the box was stacked versus like the next most of the 17 games last year, which was in the 30s. And still, you had a 100-yard game on the ground. Like, how confident are we in this team's ability to stop the run going forward? Because it's largely the same when it comes to trying to stop the run. When you talk about the spine of the defense, it's Foley, it's Settle, it's Mario Edwards, it's Aziz in the linebacking core, it's Henry in the linebacking core. It's largely the same. We haven't really talked about them stopping the run.
Yeah, and that's one of the best things about you rewatching all these games translated to this year. So I think, you know, there is a certain amount of skepticism, and we've talked about it going into the draft even, certainly into the offseason, you know, the interior defensive line, that's where it starts. And then it comes back to, you know, linebacker play. Well, we feel pretty dang good about linebacker play, especially now EJ Speed is in and all that. But the interior defensive line, fair question. Absolutely one of the things that we need to be watching as they go into the training camp and the preseason. But I also feel the fact that the secondary, since that game even, got so much better, it gives you more options up front in your front seven, you know?
I would sure hope so.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they weren't bad as a whole stopping the run last season. I don't want to make it seem like that. However, that was a point where I think there is an opportunity for growth and development, obviously watching this particular game. I want to take you, because I've tried to put in some audio. This game, very easily, you could look at this game as a microcosm of the season. Mm-hmm. Easily. Especially if you wanted to go through and look at how it didn't look good for CJ. However, even in this, the microcosm stands, because there were gems within the scrap heap of this, and one of those was this particular play to Nico Collins.
We marked the ball at the 47 of the Viking logo. It's third down. Third down and 11 for the Texans at the Viking 47. CJ shotgun. Dare in the backfield. Two receivers left. Here's the snap to Stroud. CJ pumping, firing downfield to his left, and Nico with the catch! Running out of bounds inside the 15-yard line. Mark him at the 13. That's the big play they needed.
And you can hear it in Mark's voice. Yeah. That is true. It is a third and 11. You need a big play. And allow me to draw the play up for you so you can kind of see. And Nico Collins lined up to the left. There's a second wide receiver inside. Nico motions in. So he's still the outside guy, but now it's a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
A switch release, so he ends up as now the inside guy. And then from there, he runs kind of what I typically refer to as a flag, you know, just kind of like maybe a corner route of sorts. And this is just a gorgeous football by CJ Stroud, where he feathers it in perfectly. And it's where, I mean, Nico is making basically a fingertip catch, but it's only
in the right spot.
It's perfectly over his shoulder where only he can get it. And I'm like, there's CJ in the midst of running for his life, in the midst of sometimes making a few like not great passes at times. That is CJ Stroud showing you that, hey, the greatness is in there, even in a season and in a game where maybe it wasn't as good as people anticipated and hoped. That was one of those plays that was like, no. For anybody that's like sophomore slump or whatever, even if you want to get there, CJ still has it.
And that's the microcosm part that you're talking about, you know, in terms of all the problems that he faced, whether it's running the ball and protection and running for his life, which he did a lot of, and getting sacked and getting hit, which he did a lot of in that game, there were still moments where you're like, okay, he's trying to overcome things that are almost impossible to overcome.
Now, the last thing I have for you is also CJ, but this is the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a positive spin on the back end of it, so please hear me out. But this was CJ Stroud, unfortunately, turning the football over.
Third down and a long seven across the Houston 32-yard line. Crowd revs up the volume. One back, Stroud in the gun. On third and seven, leg down. Here's the snap from Scruggs. CJ backing up. CJ coming forward, throwing downfield, and intercepted. Cameron Bynum tackled by Dell in Viking territory. Two picks on the day.
By the way, only the second game in CJ's career that he had a multi-interception game, right? Obviously, we talked a lot about that the year prior. But it's kind of interesting because the play itself, or the at least the route combination that you were looking towards, kind of a reverse of that other play. Motion in, Nico Collins switch release, except this time he's running the inside route.
Okay.
But because he's running the inside route like a post, it's too high safety, so it's supposed to be middle open. That should be the place where, you know, Nico's getting the football. CJ throws it behind him, kind of outside. And I was like, why does he make that mistake?
Yeah.
At the same time, Tank Dell is on the other side, the wide receiver, and his route is supposed to kind of go up, maybe up the seam possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But he ends up kind of taking this inside drawing into the middle of the field as well.
Bringing the safeties. And
And so my thought was, I do wonder, does Tank Dell understand what the intention of that play is? And I don't say that to knock Tank and try to say that he's any level of dumb or anything. I think that this may be, and this is the positive spin I have on it, what is Nick Haley talked about imbuing into his team this year? He wants these guys to understand not just what the play is, but what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I think if in that instance Tank Dell understands, we're trying to attack the middle of the field with Nico Collins. His route does not also end up in the middle of the field. He does not drift inside. If anything, he drifts outside to pull that safety further and give CJ a window to throw into. And that's one of the things I'm hoping in a negative play here that I can spin into a positive is that you'll see more of these instances where a play that goes bad and further and basically wipes out the ability to come back in this game is an opportunity for you to make a big play because everybody on the field is working to try and get the play as designed to work.
Now, that's true. I thought you were going to go somewhere else. I thought you were going to go to C.J. Stroud, having control at the line of scrimmage and understanding maybe the safety was cheating. We don't know. I mean, you saw it more recently than I did. But, you know, maybe the safety was cheating. Maybe there was movement after the snap where if C.J. Stroud on the field can maybe make an adjustment, whether it's Tank Dell or in this case, Christian Kirk or whomever, maybe he can make an adjustment that eliminates that.
Yeah. A couple more small things. The fourth and final sack on CJ, Kenyon Green just got diced up by a nose tackle. Not overpowered, diced up.
Yeah.
And then another one, there was a seam shot that I think CJ was trying to throw up to Dalton Schultz that he just couldn't get his hands on. I was like, that's Christian Kirk next year.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that. Mm-hmm. So that was week three versus the Minnesota Vikings. And everybody kind of wants this. Everybody's like, when it comes to this game, what I'm trying to hear is Andre Ware.
Here's the give, and they blow the play dead. Looks like a false start on the Texans. Let's find out who.
Before the snap, false start. Offense, number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first down.
Well, he got it out of the way early. Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week, though. When you're a Pro Bowl player, there's no excuse for that. None.
That was absolutely the field.
8:28 to go, first quarter.
This is my favorite part.
7-0 driving.
Honestly, I don't know why I get upset about it anymore. I should have come to expect it.
That's not week three, though, right? Like, that's not week three, but that was the feeling that everybody had revisiting the Minnesota Vikings game. So now that one's out of the way. Monday, we'll be back with week four, which is a much better feel. But there you go. That is my rewatch, week three Minnesota of the 2024 Texans season. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we get our confessions going on this Friday. We will do that.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable! Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And next.
All right, so kind of a weird thing happened yesterday, and it would have been easy to sort of like, you know, have some fun with it. But then I realized what was going on, and it wasn't really very funny at all. But y'all saw the woman who decided to put a lawn chair up in the middle of I-45.
Is that the biggest part about that, that story?
No,
that
no.
She decided to sit on the highway?
It actually was the biggest part making news.
Yeah.
It actually was. But I realized in the course of it how serious it was, she was clearly having a mental episode that was not funny. But I did realize, so I'm not mocking it at all, but it was just bizarre from the word go. I kind of realized as this whole thing, it lasted 5 hours, by the way. It was from 1:30 to 6:30 p.m.
I guess I did not think, because I heard about it. I didn't hear about it at the start. Mm-hmm. So I guess I missed the first couple of hours, and then I did not mm-hmm. see it through all the way to six.
Yeah. So I realized over the course of this, one of the most underappreciated, we always talk about underappreciated jobs, you know, in the world and all that. I guess, what do they call them? Police negotiator. Like that was like the kind of happy ending, if there is such a thing in situations like this. So the police negotiator talked to her for all this time. She had a gun. She was having a mental episode. She was sitting in the middle of I-45. Both ways were shut down for obvious reasons. And I'm like, this ended up about as good a situation as could come out of something like this because of one guy, the police negotiator. And once it was settled and she put down the gun and came over, she was hugging that negotiator, like a passionate long hug, you know. And I'm like, that dude just saved a lot of trouble, a lot of money, and maybe some lives.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a job that I know I couldn't do. Like, it requires quite a bit of, like, tightrope walking
mm-hmm.
In a mental sense. And because also, who would have thought that this would be like in the job description, having to talk someone off of a highway mm-hmm. who has a weapon in that
mm-hmm.
space.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you talk about dealing with the mental episode in that circumstance. Yeah, there's not, and I know that there's levels of preparation, but I don't know how you actively prepare for all the different circumstances that you get.
For that?
It's a emotional job, man,
mm-hmm.
because you got to understand that person's emotions. You got to know how to talk to that person.
Yeah.
You got to know to stay calm and just, you know, don't get ahead of yourself type thing.
And it can
break
in any direction at any moment.
You don't want to be aggressive.
Yeah.
That's a tough job.
Yeah. That's what I took out. I was like, this dude, whoever you are, if you're listening, I mean, salute, because that is a really wild job that they do every day. Every day they have to negotiate some circumstance, you know, some hostage situation, a situation like this that is completely unpredictable. So I was like, this is one of the more underappreciated jobs on the planet.
And then understanding the situation, too, because you don't want to go in guns blazing or anything like that.
Right.
And that could be a whole nother situation.
You know, the SWAT team had her in sight, in their sights. They had to.
They had to. Yeah. I mean, that's part of their job a little bit, because you don't know what was going to happen.
And he negotiated the whole thing in a peaceful.
And everybody went. Yeah. Everybody was able to stay alive and go home to their families and stuff. So.
Yeah. It was a weird traffic day yesterday, though.
It was a wild traffic day yesterday.
One of those days that makes me very happy that I don't mm-hmm. typically have to be in traffic. There you go. So yesterday was a Hunter Brown day, as we have deemed them, and Hunter Brown delivered, as he often does. He lowered his ERA this season to a 1.74. It was already league leading before. Mm-hmm. I think it was 1.88 prior, but his seven innings of baseball, again, lowered it to 1.74. That apparently is the fourth lowest ERA after the first 16 starts in Astros history. This is per Chandler Rome. The only guys better: Nolan Ryan with the 1.29 back in 81. Roger Clemens with the 1.50 in 05, which is kind of crazy to think about Nolan Ryan being a good 20 points lower
1.29.
than that. Justin Verlander with the 1.60 in 18. And then, of course, this 1.74 by Hunter Brown. And I got to be honest. One, I'm already in a place where I think Hunter Brown's going to be like one of those 10-year type pitchers. Like, I don't mm-hmm. think this is going to be one of those, oh, he came up, he kind of, you know, was...
Yeah.
burned bright for a second and then went back to being just kind of like another guy. I think that he's going to be one of those special pitchers. And with that, how long before we end up in a Hunter Brown as top four pitcher in
Mount
Rushmore? Yeah, Mount Rushmore Astros pitcher history, starting pitcher history.
Well, on your first point, I do think he's here for the duration. He doesn't have a violent motion, which kind of shortens career sometimes. He obviously does the work, very well groomed, as a pitcher, and has an arsenal. He's got five pitches, and so he is built to last, so to speak. On your second point, boy, that's a high bar. Shout out to Rafael Stone. That pitching Mount Rushmore in Houston, that is a very high bar.
Because
one thing the Astros have always had is starting pitchers.
Right, because, I mean, who are we talking about? Obviously, the three that I mentioned are guys that are obviously in contention, where you talk about Nolan, you talk about Roger Clemens, mm-hmm. you talk about Verlander. Those are easily guys in there. And there's
Garrett
other guys.
Cole.
Yeah.
Dallas Keuchel. Mike Hampton. Roy Oswalt.
There's some greats.
Mike Scott. Starting pitching has, I mentioned Garrett Cole. Like, there's 8 or 10 that are like all-timers.
This is year 4 of Hunter Brown. You have three more controllable years, and I think that they'd be smart if they can find a way to relatively early on find their way into an extension.
Mm-hmm.
If you were able to get more than the next, 6 years, you're able to get the next 6 years of them, I think that you could very easily be in that territory.
That's
which,
crazy.
Again, is just speaking.
And I'm not saying you're crazy, because I would consider it, but it's a really high bar. It's a really high bar.
Oh, shout out to the 281. Went ahead and put money on it. Bet Hunter Brown for Cy Young 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I imagine that your odds are only getting better as we continue to move along here.
Mm-hmm.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
So we kind of brought up the traffic, crazy traffic day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in that traffic.
Oh,
I was not on 45, so I wasn't around when the lady was sitting in the lawn chair or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I was somewhere totally different, and it was crazy traffic, man. I don't know what it was, but I'll get to my confession in a minute. But no, when I left here, I ran across like 5 different accidents.
Mm-hmm. Yikes.
Like, to go home, I ran across like 5 different accidents, including a big ass truck. Yes. I counted like 5 stalled cars,
mm-hmm.
and it was storming. It was raining too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a truck flipped over pretty much on the side, on the opposite side of the freeway. So that was backing up the traffic on my side of the freeway. So it was just so much going on. It was a fender bender right in front of me. I'm like, damn, Lord, just let me make it home
mm-hmm.
because it was crazy. And then I had to work an event yesterday
mm-hmm.
and I had to go to the Omni Hotel. So, which is like 20 minutes away from me.
Yeah.
I left out the house around 3:15.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't get there till 5:30.
Yeah, well.
Yikes.
this is crazy. And this is my confession. I think Lamont hit me up on Twitter, pretty much said, hey, get out the city, pretty much, because mm-hmm. he stayed far out the inner city.
Yeah.
And he don't have to deal with that traffic. He said, get out the city. I'm kind of thinking about that.
Oh, you ready
man.
To move out to the burbs, huh?
Now, honestly, I can't because I work here, so I will have to come to the city regardless.
Yeah.
But I actually thought about, like, damn, if I had a stay-at-home job, I would be out far somewhere.
Oh, stay at home.
If it was a stay-at-home job.
Before you tell me, Figgy, Lopez, where you think we're talking about? We talking Pearland, League City?
No, he's talking about out
nah,
the city.
I'm talking about like Tomball. Montgomery. Yeah, Montgomery County.
Magnolia.
Yeah. I'm talking about there. At least let me get
Cleveland.
Let me get some land and all that stuff too. Like some space.
Like out, which will probably be in the city in 10 years. But.
Yeah.
The way that it works.
As long as I got like a Walmart, an HEB, something like that. Yeah. Because I realize I don't even be kicking it out in these streets like that. So why do I need to stay in the city with all this traffic and people?
It's called
and,
a job, Figgy. It's called a job.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But if I had to do this job, if I could do this job at home, I would be out. I would be far out, man.
Where should Figgy live? That's a good question.
Yeah.
Where would Figgy live? It's not where should he, but where could you see Figgy live? That was where my mind went.
But that day, it was crazy yesterday, man. Mm-hmm. To the point, it had me jump off the freeway.
Yeah.
And it took me right in the path of where Daikin Park is.
Yikes.
And the game let out at the same time. So I was stuck over there for like an hour.
Hey, no joke. You guys know how much I love to fish and everything, and that's the biggest reason. But one of the best things about getting away as much as I do on the weekends is that. I mean, there's just like open space, two traffic lights, you know, just like no traffic.
It took me over 2 hours to get somewhere. It would have took me 20 minutes.
Yeah. They said, Figgy Fig in Navasota, Texas, coming to a radio near you.
Going to Brenham.
832 said they have land out in Boiling. Come be their neighbor, Fig.
Hey, I'm down for it, man. Yeah. As long as I could just stay there. Mm-hmm. And if I choose to go to the city, I can go to the city.
Yes, you can always get there.
Just the everyday commute, man.
I think PC
is
wrong. PC said you're going to move out to Katy with him.
Katy is kind of getting crowded,
Katy
too.
Katy is just flat out not out of the city. It is some of the worst traffic there is.
Yeah, no, and that's getting crowded, too, man. Yeah. I'm talking about I need a couple acres.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, get out the city.
You're going to get a plow.
Yeah. They said Figgy about to be in Willis.
Right. No, for real, man.
You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Those are our lunchtime confessions presented by the Men's Clinic. Coming up next, inspired by the NBA draft of sorts, where it feels like a couple of guys landed in places that it fits them perfectly. I got us thinking, what players in sports were perfect fits for the cities where they played? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about it next. Happy Friday to you. Happy DJ Screw Day to you. You're in the loop right here on
Country
Sports
Figgy.
Radio 610. We are having a good time. Yes. That has been an interesting subsection of what we've been doing today of our confessions is now. Apparently Figgy is operating like a college football recruit because all the people of various towns and municipalities.
Come to my town. Come to this town.
Yeah. They said, hey. Come back and be my neighbor in Rosharon. Somebody said, come to Hitchcock. Somebody said, you need to be in High Meadow Ranch in Magnolia. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think this person likes you because they said that they hear the land's cheap in Vider.
Oh, man.
So
y'all had to school me on Vider. I wasn't familiar. Yeah, I'm glad y'all did.
You would get familiar. You would get. And then Captain Scott said, get your land. Get your slides on. You can get your horse.
There you go.
That's a good idea, man.
Be out here like Ed Oliver, living right.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. We're just having a little fun on a Friday. I hope your day is going well. And what's lovely is that you can look out and see, you know, the sky and the clouds, which means they're not opening up in the way that they were yesterday. So hopefully traffic is a lot better on a Friday than it was on a Thursday. All right. Let's talk about this because you were watching round two of the draft too, weren't you? Look at
you.
No,
I wasn't.
Sicko. No, don't lie. Don't lie. You're a sicko.
I checked in. I watched for round one, which was kind of surprising to me. But yesterday I was just checking in.
I totally missed it yesterday too. I was trying to find a list of all the people that was drafted. I couldn't even find it.
That's what I was doing, just seeing who went where. And one of my favorite players, which you know, he haunted the Aggies once. Although they did beat him once too. But Johnny Broom from
I think it's John I.
John I. Yeah,
I think that's the pronunciation.
John I. Broom. Broom from Auburn. One of my favorite players got drafted. Was it 38 something like that to Philadelphia, and I thought that place is perfect for him. He is rugged guy, kind of. No real definition in his game in terms of excellence, but does everything well, will do everything well.
Just real North Philly is what you're going
for
here?
He's a Philadelphia guy. And I'm like, that's perfect. And then I saw the kid from Mississippi State, Cam Matthews. The Rockets signed him to a two-way deal.
That's right.
He is a defensive menace. I think he was SEC Defensive Player of the Year 2 years in a row.
That's what you like to hear. Yeah. I bet Ime, look, Ime, I'm assuming that Ime actually knew, but for the purposes of the joke, let's assume that he didn't. And then Rafael's like, hey, Ime, I got this kid for you. He won Defensive Player of the Year twice. Ime was just like, stop!
Yep, that's all I need to hear.
Get him now!
He's perfect.
In the SEC.
I love him already.
In the SEC, which was, you know, arguably the best conference in by teams in the postseason, they were the best team in basketball. So he is perfect for Houston, perfect for Ime. Got me thinking. You know, what players in sports were just perfect for the city in which they played?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
We talk about in the past, right?
Anytime,
past?
Yeah.
Anything?
Yeah. Okay. Present? Why? I mean, because, look, the tough thing about it is if we go to the Texans, we can name up and down a lot of the dudes that seem to fit perfectly with what the ethos is and what they're doing. The name that immediately came to mind, and maybe this has just been like because, one, the stature, but then, two, kind of the conversation points, it felt like Tim Duncan fit San Antonio.
I had him on my list. Tim Duncan in San Antonio is perfect. Just perfect. The other one that I thought of was Big Ben. And forget the controversial stuff. I'm going to talk about Big Ben as a player in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, man, big tough.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Like perfect. Pittsburgh, Steel City, Worker City.
It's funny. I said the same thing about Will Howard.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that's the perfect fit for somebody like them. And what do you know he got drafted?
You sure did.
And Jack Sawyer, who played for the Ohio State.
Yes, he did.
When he got drafted, I'm like, dog, he got Pittsburgh written all over him.
One from way back and one from very recently that I think they're perfect for the cities in which they played or playing. Magic Johnson. I mean,
that is a great point.
That's perfect.
Come on, man.
And that's why he basically owns half of LA, right? Like, there is not anybody that is as charismatic in sports, I don't think.
He got drafted by them and been in LA since.
Showtime. I mean, come on. Which the name came when he came, but still, it fits LA.
What are the Lakers if they don't end up with Magic Johnson? Because it's still a historic franchise, but I don't think the glitz and glam hit. I think that, like, you know.
Yeah, glitzy and glamoury with Jerry West and Wilt and, you know, you go back. No, they were still, but he put it to an altogether.
Right.
I don't know if they would have been Showtime.
The Showtime ethos is still what they're rolling off of.
Yeah,
like, they're still eating off of that particular idea. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of that is just because in the 80s is where the league popped off. So, you know, as people in the American consciousness find who they believe the Lakers to be, it is in this time period that gets locked in. But, I mean, they're still going, honestly, as a mom-and-pop shop, as they've operated up until they just sold for a $10 billion, like, they've never really been winning off of just the money that they have. They've won off of, like, the style and the flair and obviously the city.
And the attraction,
So much of that is Magic. Like, there's an argument to be said that Magic is one of the reasons why all of that goes.
More recently, real quick, before you get it, Caitlin Clark. I mean, perfect.
Indiana.
Perfect.
I can see that.
Absolutely.
Some ones that are coming in, the ones that have really made me very happy. Shout out to Magic for having this spot on. Zach Randolph in Memphis. Z-Bo in Memphis was perfect. Like, I remember hearing stories of Z-Bo. I don't know if it was game days or whatever, but just being in Memphis and not like in the city of Memphis, but in Memphis out here, like, shooting dice with folks on a stoop or something. It's like, hey, dog, aren't you a basketball player? So you don't matter. These are his people. The type of people that will sit out on a stoop and shoot dice. That is Zach Randolph to a T. And then if we bring this back home to Houston, I feel like you've had a number of them on the basketball team. I want you to power rank for me, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Who is the most Houston out of these three? James Harden, Dwight Howard, Hakeem Olajuwon.
That's a
not who's the greatest.
I would say.
Because obviously we know how that goes. But who's the most Houston?
Otis Thorpe.
Why Otis?
Big dude, tough, sleeves rolled up, does anything, represents Houston. I thought Otis was about as Houston as you could get. Maybe Vernon.
Vernon Maxwell?
Yeah.
Mad Max.
Fight you. I will fight you.
I was going to say Hakeem, to be honest.
Yeah, probably Dream.
Because, you know, went to U of H, Nigerian.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of Nigerians that moved to Houston.
Yeah.
I feel like you can't get no more Houston than that.
Yeah, it would be Dream for me.
I mean, you don't want to focus on James Harden supporting local business.
Yeah, as in what?
the robust industry
yes.
of booty clubs here yeah. in here in Houston.
Hey, I mean, he's on the list. He's on the list. What about Earl? Earl and Bum.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Well, I mean, Bum is easy. Bum was out here in yeah. the cowboy hat and everything. Like that
I think Earl for sure.
Earl
man.
And Bum. Yeah, Earl and Bum both.
Somebody said James fumbled what he could have been to Houston. He had the chance to own this town. Okay.
Well, he kind of did like, for a while.
But see, I feel like outside of the strip clubs, I mean, what else was he? I mean, hitting the town type thing.
That's fair. Obviously, it was more joke than anything. Like
nothing wrong with that.
Gerald Green, obviously a Houston kid. Like yeah. very, very most Houston. The 713 says, and it's not even close. Is there one that you think of? I mean, obviously we mentioned Hakeem, and JJ is beloved, but I don't know. Do you say that he is Houston?
Who's
the most Houston that you think about of the one? Because I mean, you in particular mm-hmm. have had the opportunity to cover guys for a long time.
You're talking about in for the Texans,
just in general. Because I'm just all the way around.
I'd say Earl and Baum.
Nolan
would be a really good one. Yeah. In terms of Rockets, it'd have to be Dream, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Somebody said Name It the New York. Oh yeah, Broadway Joe.
For
definitely,
sure.
Definitely yeah. had that feel.
Derek Jeter in New York.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Derek Jeter in New York.
I mean, you definitely, you know, kind of compare mm-hmm. him.
Could have been an Astro.
At that. Somebody said
should have been an Astro.
This is a good one, although obviously the dog fighting scandal really, you know, soured it. But Michael Vick in Atlanta looked like he was going to be a thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously on the field, he was a menace. But, like, it was just like a cultural kind of
felt like he was from Atlanta.
Yeah, it did. But let me ask you this, because you're saying Atlanta reminded me. Was Dion Moore Atlanta, Dallas, or San Francisco? I think Dallas.
I think
Dallas.
I felt like he fit in more with Dallas.
That new money flash, you know, that new money flash in Dallas.
That's a fair
that
point.
That type yeah. of franchise,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Somebody said Mad Max is more Third Ward. Okay, I see what you're doing there. 281, Andre Johnson is an interesting one. They said quiet but gets the job done.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like, I mean, the thing about Houston is a lot of things simultaneously, so it's probably right. not it's, fair to flatten it. But there is very much an aspect of like the general greater Houston area that's just like, hey man, we do what we do, we get it done.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, and what you said is absolutely correct too. You can define it as Dream is perfect, Bum is perfect, and those are two polar opposite personalities and styles, you know.
Some other ones, someone said Jerry Glanville, Case Keenum came in, Clemens, Roger, obviously.
Oh yeah, Roger would be there. Yeah,
Spring,
the Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, all the way down to the nickname. John Stockton in Utah. Are we doing something in particular there? Actually, if you talk about Utah and who fits the ethos more, isn't Karl Malone more of that? It
could be.
And that is probably derogatory and pejorative.
Yeah.
And I said what I said.
Yeah.
all right. Keep those coming in. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us on this Friday. Coming up next, I didn't want to get to this because we're halfway through the baseball season now. 81 games for your Astros on the books. They're, I mean, handling it incredibly well. A nice 6.5-game lead in the AL West. What's been the most surprising portion of the first half of the season for the Astros for you? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about some Astros and what they're about to do with the Cubs this weekend next.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.